You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the My Senior Horse Podcast. This is for people who own, manage, and love senior horses, ponies, donkeys, and mules, come to share our passion and to learn more about caring for our senior equids. With this episode, I'm excited to start a three-part podcast series on managing senior horses and herds with Drs. Pat Harris and Nikki Jarvis. Both are equine veterinarians. I'm your host, Kim Brown, editorial director of My Senior Horse. We launched the global My Senior Horse brand in partnership with Linda Mars and Mars Horse Care in mid-2024. We offer many ways to get information on older equids, including this bi-weekly podcast, articles on the MySeniorHorse.com website, videos, and so much more. Dr. Harris is one of our guests today, and she's a past president of the British Equine Veterinary Association and is a European specialist in veterinary and comparative nutrition. She is the Equine Nutrition and Science Advisor to Mars Horse Care and Waltham Equine Studies Group, Waltham Pet Care Science Institute. Dr. Harris has spent much of the last 30 years working to help improve the care and nutrition of older horses. She's also is passionate about seniors because of her dedication to her own older horses. Dr. Harris advised on the care of many senior equids and has authored numerous articles on their care. Her involvement in several global senior research teams gives her special insight into some of these studies. Dr. Harris is also on the Executive Advisory Council for My Senior Horse. Dr. Jarvis is head of veterinary care at Red Wings Horse Sanctuary in Norfolk, England. She qualified from the Royal Veterinary College, London, in 1990 and worked in mixed practice for 2 years before moving to Newmarket, where she completed a 2-year internship at Rossdale's Equine Hospital. Dr. Jarvis then joined Red Wings Horse Sanctuary in Norfolk in 1996. She is now head of veterinary and care, working with what she calls an incredible team of veterinary surgeons and nurses to care for more than 1,200 resident horses, ponies, donkeys, and mules. Dr. Jarvis attained her RCVS Certificate of Advanced Veterinary Practice in Equine Medicine in 2012 and her Cert AVP in Equine Surgery Soft Tissue in 2013. She has a keen interest in equine nutrition, geriatric medicine, internal medicine, and colic. So as you can see, our next three podcasts are going to be great because we get to pick the brains of these guys. So thank you for joining us today, Drs. Harris and Jarvis.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Me too, Dr. Harris.
And thank you for the invitation, because I know that Pat and I, when we get together, we love talking about older horses. So it's hopefully going to be quite a sort of fireside chat about lots of relevant things.
Well, that's why I'm so excited, is because both of you are not only educated in this, but you're passionate about it. And that's what our audience loves. So I'm going to start here. So most owners are senior horses, ponies, donkeys, and mules. Have them as part of a mixed herd. And so that's going to be the subject of part one of our series today. So our first question is going to be to Dr. Jarvis. Let's start with introducing seniors to a mixed herd. You know, how is adding a senior equid to a herd any different from adding a younger horse or, you know, working with any other horses in your experience? And I mean, I want to talk about herd dynamics and pecking order and companions and loss of companions. So this is going to be really interesting for me, because this is what I deal with on a day-to-day basis. So Dr. Jarvis?
Oh, I love this question. It's a fantastic question. Working for a large welfare charity, actually integrating younger and older horses is something we do come across quite frequently. When a horse comes into our care, it can, of course, be of any age. And sometimes it might also be a mare rescued that's pregnant. So we know that there will soon be a foal as well. So there's lots to consider. And I think you sort of, just as a starting point, I thought I might like to consider what happens when you've a new horse. So it could be a new horse to a rescue charity or a new horse to your premises, and you're thinking about integrating that horse to an existing group, because I think that happens quite a lot in people's lives, you know. And I think I was trying to think about this earlier as to how important the age of the horse is. And I kept coming back to, actually, to a degree, it is down to the individual equine. Pat and I, I'm sure, have seen our fair share of very feisty older people. I intend to be very feisty when I'm even older than I am now. And so I think a lot of the older horses, because they have seen it all and done it all, they can be quite confident in a group. But I think maybe that starts to change when they feel less physically well. Perhaps, you know, as they get older, they might have chronic pain, osteoarthritis that people don't even know that they have. And I think once a horse starts to feel physically vulnerable or unwell, then probably, you know, you will start to see changes in the pecking order. And of course, we've got to account for the group you're hoping to blend them into. So it might be there are some really dominant characters in that group. And so straight away, this older horse that is already normally quite a confident horse, actually, when integrated with a long established herd, does struggle and does immediately find itself going down the pecking order. So I think it's considering your individual you've got in front of you, and it's considering the group you're going to go into. But now, I did ask for some top tips from our behavioural teams at Red Wings. And so thank you very much, Felicity, name check. Because I said, obviously, they do integrations particularly well. All of our farms do integrations particularly well. And when I'm talking about integrations, actually, I'd like to extend that to a horse that's come away from a group for vet care, and that vet care has been very prolonged. So sometimes you can't assume that you can take a horse away for 3 weeks and treat a, you know, an injury and it, oh, I'm just going to pop it back out. Even that often needs to be done gently. So our teams, what they tend to do, first of all, is consider the horse in front of them. Because again, it doesn't matter what age that horse is. If that horse has been kept in isolation, which is, you know, maybe part of the rescue, that it's been kept isolated away from other horses, it might not have the greatest social skills. It might not be able to read other horses very well. Again, if it's a youngster, it might not have those social skills or be able to read other horses very well. And that can make it prone to injury, etc. So I think it's important to think about the individual. Then when you think you've got a group that could be super suitable, what our teams tend to do is they will put tape on a section of the field. So that is, in our case, that's you know, herd electric tapes or similar. And they'll put the new horse on, but safely the other side of tape or fencing, so that they can see each other over the fence. And they start to watch for the facial expressions. They start to watch for subtle signs of integration, perhaps talking to another equine over the fence or at least pleasant facial expressions, etc. Once they've got that, they will then find another equine off the main group, or perhaps sometimes two. They will bring that to the other side of the fence with the new equine, and they will build up a bond there. So that when finally the integration takes place, you're not putting one horse into a group, you're sending a group of two or three back in. And that really does seem to help. But they have, on previous occasions, they've tried an integration where they've only got as far as having the horses opposite sides of the tape, but they've just not been happy with the facial expressions, with the interactions over the fence. And in those cases, they will come back to the rest of the team and say, no, I think we're going to have to think of a new group. And I'm in a very privileged position of A, having a lot of very experienced behavioural people working at Red Wings, but also our farm teams are marvellous, and they can usually find a different group if the first one doesn't work out. Now private owners won't have that, so they're going to need to take things even slower, and keep watching for body language. It's really important. you know, you see it in people, don't you? You can tell when people don't like each other. And but yeah, it's observation, really, really sort of observation. So I don't know, Pat, whether or not you've got sort of other thoughts about good ways to do integration or signs to look for.
More, I would like to emphasize, as you said, that sometimes it isn't the right thing to integrate an older horse into the group that might already be there, in that if that horse has particular issues and the other horses are not going to be suitable to allow that to happen, or the land is not suitable for that older horse, so it's not a suitable place to put it, then I think, and that's something for owners to just think about. In the majority of cases, as Nikki says, if you do it very slowly, you watch the horse, you put another horse with them that they seem to bond with to get that. But there are some individuals where, either for health reasons or for the land reasons, you might be better to think of another way of managing them. Or is there another group, or is there another part of the livery area that you can do? And I think we sometimes forget that sometimes we have to say it won't work with this horse, but it's, you know, it's worth taking it slowly. So I think for me, and then the other thing is Nikki and I are really, really fond of, is monitoring. I think it's monitoring in those initial days, but actually you need to keep monitoring, because that horse may actually then be put down either your pecking order that you talked to Kim, or for me, is being prevented subtly from getting access to feed or water for whatever reason. And you need to spend a bit of time. So I think it's careful introduction, it's good looking at the horses, but it's also not forgetting you need to monitor over time.
Oh, that's some great tips there. So when you have them, companion, we have dealt with this. I bought a new mare. We took our big gray mule because, you know, his mama was a mare. He's really low on the pecking order, so we knew he wasn't going to. And this mare, when we asked, they said, oh, she's about mid-level, you know. So took him up, put them in a paddock together. They were across the fence because we have a very dominant red mare. And so they had a chance to get some. And then when we finally turned them out one day, everybody had already been fed, so there was no competition. And we turned them out, and the red mare, the boss mare, starts to go over to remind this new mare who she was. And this new red mare was like, nope, I got it. You're the boss. I have no problem with that. And she went and hid behind the big gray gelding mule. And the big mule's going, I don't want any part of this. You know, it was just the dance that was going on. But it's like you said, the observation, thinking about how you're going to do it, give them a buddy so that they do have a you know, safe zone that they can get into. So that was, and there was plenty of room. You know, she couldn't get, it's a huge field, so it wasn't like she couldn't get away. So, yeah, I think
Kim, that is, you've brought up two good points. That is, it's trying to find an area to do the introduction where they can't get cornered. And also, I loved your point about making sure there's no resource issue when they go out. So all animals have been fed, they're not then coming and fighting for meeting you at the gate. Try and turn them out where someone, you're away from that dangerous area. And I'm sure, Nikki, that's what your team do as well.
Yeah, definitely, because I think they're such excellent points, and glad you guys brought it up, because one of the highest risk groups to try and integrate a horse onto, I feel, is a group of horses that you've got on a diet, because they already feel they would like more resources. So trying to blend a horse into that group that they're completely unfamiliar with, that horse, particularly if they are on takedown paddock, you know, restricted grazing, that can be very difficult. So as you say, even with the slowest integration in the world, if we were trying to integrate a horse and we'd done it carefully, we'd done all the meets and greets over the fences, extra horses, at the point of turnout, if it was a tape down field, we would probably move the tape so everyone had a nice wide band of grass And then there's no sort of, goodness me, you've just put a new customer on the field and we're already quite hungry and would like some grass. So I think resources are critical. So that's a really good point, Pat and Kim.
Well, and Dr. Jarvis, you had
mentioned... Sorry, I'm just going to add one more, Kim. Sorry. There are some individual animals where actually putting them separate causes more stress to the groups. And sometimes you watch that, and I think, Nikki, you mentioned about looking at the horse. There are some individuals where you can see they're getting quite stressed. They're fine when they talk to each other, but they really want to be together. And sometimes you can introduce relatively quickly if the animals are. So it always comes back to the individual.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the more accustomed you are, and presumably if you're anyone that's got a number of horses, I should imagine you are quite good at equine body language, but you do almost need to speak their language and observe them and just watch for all of the subtle signs, because just sort of touching noses over a fence, it doesn't necessarily mean they're besties. It may mean they're sizing each other up. So you need to have, like you say, ears forward, nice relaxed facial expressions, no tension in the neck or the face. Do you know what I mean? You need it lovely and relaxed. And I mean, you know, mutual grooming over a fence is the dream. Sadly, that seldom happens, but you do. Yeah, you want a lovely relaxed facial expression. And the important thing is to know that if you don't think it's going well when they're over the fence, it definitely isn't going to go well when you put them together. So you will have to think of that plan B, as Pat said.
Oh, that's a great point. And Dr. Jarvis, you mentioned something earlier that got me to thinking. You said sometimes you will actually have pregnant mares come in so you really will have a mixed herd. And I know when I worked in the thoroughbred industry, and a lot of times they would have an old babysitter mare that would stay with the weanlings so that they had someone to teach them right from wrong and to be the school marm in the group. So I know a lot of people will bring an older horse in to be a babysitter for weanlings or yearlings. And that's, I think, a great way to keep seniors active and involved. But I also think they can wear that senior horse out sometimes. So how do you, when you're talking about that mixed of our herd, you know, we're getting ready to face that. It's like, where are we going to put this weanling that we've got? Because we only have one. We don't have a herd of weanlings. So give us some tips on that.
Well, you've made me smile, Kim, because obviously we did have a recent rescue where we did end up with a considerable number of youngsters. So actually we did have it, but yeah, a couple of things. And again, very importantly, this is consulting obviously with the farms and our behavioral teams, who work really, really hard, because when you have a youngster born on site from a rescue case, it's really important and really challenging to ensure that they're brought up well. Obviously, the other thing we come across, and I know I've asked Pat's advice before, read the nutrition, we do come across orphan foals that come to us, and they're quite unique in terms of what they need. So definitely if we had an orphan foal, we would definitely try to find a really kind mare, probably one on our farms that had foals before, and show that natural tendency, that lovely little whinny every time they saw a youngster. So we do have one or two nominated gorgeous mares who are drafted in to help when we have an orphan foal. Obviously, that's incredibly important, because you want to stop them mistaking humans as part of the herd, which is going to lead to behavioural issues. So that's really, really important. We do always like to, if we've got youngsters, we will always try and sort of pair match. So we'll always try and find a youngster of a similar age to be with them, or at least close, because we think playtime is important. And then if there can be a matriarch of some description who comes in, because you do need that older horse, hasn't got to be radically older, just one that's got life skills, who can teach social skills about what's acceptable and what's not. If you're lucky enough to have managed to match with a play date, I tend to find then that the older horse doesn't get too run around, actually, because the youngsters can do their thing. And And I've witnessed quite often, it's the older one on the field who says, "Oi, enough, enough of this," and will tell the youngsters off. Obviously, again, it all comes down to observation. There might be the rare horse where it is actually being bullied by the youngsters, and that does need addressing. But we do generally find that provided that older horse is, and it's crucial here, is fit and well and healthy, and, you know, has the right dentition such that it's not struggling to cope with the forage that the youngsters are on, and is properly blended to the group, I actually think, yeah, they work really, really well. Good babysitting skills, but very importantly, helps teach them social skills. And that's what we like. We also find it can be crucial during the weaning process. So obviously at the rescue, we don't wean as early as they might commercially. So we're in a fortunate position in that we can wean later. But our skilled teams in this one scenario where we had quite a large group of horses that all gave birth quite rapidly together, we did have a couple of horses on that group that weren't in foal, that were with the group all along. So when it came to weaning, the least stressful process for the youngsters was to just very gradually start to remove paired mums from the group. So it was far less stressful for the youngsters, far less stressful for the mums, but you had wonderful social skills. And as I say, we were in a blessed environment where we could leave them together that little bit longer. So there was very little dependence. And I should imagine quite a few of the mums were delighted to get away. Yeah. So, but it left plenty of playmates, but with some older horses, teach them social skills. So yeah, I think it can work incredibly well. There are some downsides to it, but pretty much I think there are a lot of positives.
Dr. Harris, do you have any comments to add to this?
I'm just going to re-support. I think gradual weaning wherever possible is the best way, leaving them so that they have that environment. It's much less stressful for the mares and the foals, or now weanlings. So really important, that whole weanling process. And I know we're here for seniors, but it was such a good point that Nikki meant. I think the other thing just to mention in the mixed age group, depending on the size of the group and how they form their bonds, if one of the horses, be that the older horse or be it a younger companion that's bonded with an older horse, when you take them out to ride, that can be a very stressful time. And I think that, again, needs to be managed. Is there, you know, if you've got a large enough group, sometimes they will be okay. They may be standing there watching, but they're not pacing because the rest of their group is fine. But if you've only got two animals and one old and one young, and one of them is being ridden, that can be quite stressful. And then I think you need to find, where are you best to put that animal? Is it better to go into a small enclosed space where it may get stressed, but you can give it some food, you can give it a treat, you can give it some forage, and it's in an area it still feels safe, it knows that area? Or actually, is it better to be allowed to stand by the gate and it can watch and wait for its companion to come home? I can't tell. They are both. Some horses I've had and known prefer one and others the other, but that is always a challenging, especially if they're very bonded. And I think that can be another very stressful time.
Mars Equestrian, a sponsorship division of Mars Incorporated, is dedicated to highlighting the Mars brands, such as Buckeye Nutrition, Spillers, Antech Diagnostics, Sound Imaging, Royal Canin, Pedigree, Nutro, and many more in the equestrian world. Whether it's through nutrition, veterinary care, or education, our purpose is to create a better world for horses, pets, and the people who love them.
That's a really good point, Pat, because obviously quite a lot of people will consider getting that slightly older non-ridden horse, won't they, for a companion, for their sort of competition horse. So it's quite often a focal point. And as you say, they don't all react well. Another point that just came to mind, and I know that obviously there's a lot of focus now on parasite control, doing it correctly, and fecal worm egg counts rather than sort of just blanket worming, etc. So it's a very topical issue. But just to bear in mind, if you are radically mixing your age groups, your foals, your yearlings will be, you know, shedding quite a lot of worms and will be require of excellent pasture management. Now, I'm not saying I think all horses need excellent pasture management, but when you have got those higher shedding youngsters in with some of your middle-aged and older horses, it just be really mindful. You are going to have that higher sort of level of droppings removal, pasture management. Consider your stocking density. If you've got a group, you know, it's really important, because I think with older horses, the majority of horses as they age, they tend to be ones where you rapidly find actually they don't, a particular horse doesn't particularly shed worms, and you get lovely low counts some of the time. But you can get very older horses or horses with PPID where they actually can become almost like vulnerable again. And in some of these older horses, out of the blue, I've seen roundworm paraascaris come back into play. And bearing in mind, youngsters love roundworm and paraascaris. So I think it's just being mindful. You know, there's so many pros to having a variety of age, but it is just being mindful of some of the conditions and some of the variations between the young horse and the old horse.
And I would like to ask you all, and I'll start with Dr. Jarvis. I mean, you mentioned something earlier that brought to my mind, you know, I have horses with ID and PPID, you know, with that many horses, you're going to have things, especially the older horses. And of course, they don't get to go out on the big pasture. Mm-hmm. So we call it the fat kids lot. You know, they have to go up on the dry lot and they get allocated what they get. They still get their exercise. But when you're re-switching those companions around, sometimes they're not with who they really want to be. So how do you make that easier, especially with these seniors that have physical problems? I don't have a choice. They can't be out on that grass. They'll get laminitis. And the one I have will.
It is very difficult. And wherever possible at the sanctuary, if two horses come in together and they're bonded, we don't separate them. We work very hard not to separate them. I think, though, realistically, you may have a horse that is insulin dysregulated and can only have minimal access to grass, almost if any. And I think you do have to make the difficult decision that putting the horse in a scenario where it might get laminitis is actually quite a big welfare thing. And also, if it gets laminitis, you're going to have to bring it into a stable anyway. So it's going to end up away from its group. Sounds awful anyway. So sometimes you do have to see whether or not it is possible to pair bond with a horse with similar needs. Now, again, we're in a privileged position where we will always have a horse out there with similar needs. It would be our last resort because we highly value friendships. We really highly value them. An option in a private home, and I'd be interested for Pat's comments as well, is an option in a private home might be something like one horse wears a grazing muzzle when they have turnout. But again, grazing muzzles are to only be used for part of the day. And if then the rest of the day that muzzle is taken off, then they're going to play catch up with themselves. So, yeah, I think you do have to think long and hard that if you have one with a serious condition, whereby the companion and that horse are completely unmatched. We've had it before when maybe a horse is matched with a group, but its dentition has finally started to become smooth-mouthed or it's lost teeth. And finally, we've had to make the difficult decision that it can't be on a group that receives hay or haylage. Maybe it's had a couple of incidents of pelvic flexure impaction or even choke, and it's saying actually you have to offset how ill it could be versus trying to find it a new group. But we are blessed. We do have new groups, and we are usually, in the rare event it's needed, really successful in finding it friends.
Yeah, and just to add to that, there are some, and again, it all depends on what the individual issues are, but sometimes you can build a little simple pen so that the animal that needs their own individual feeding can be separated, but still with its companions, so it's there. Sometimes you can, if your ground is okay, you can have a little taped off area for the animal that needs to be off the grass, but they're still part of the group. It does not work for all, because some will go through any electric fence if their group moves to another part of the field. But you can use pens to sometimes give the feed that are different. So there are ways that, under certain circumstances, you can manage some of these conditions and keep them together. But I'm with, and the grazing muzzle, the one point about grazing muzzles is sometimes that alters, even if you turn out for a few hours. I'm a great believer that grazing muzzles can be very useful, but you have to be aware that for some individual, it changes the herd dynamics, because they can no longer make those mouth shapes that warn the other animals, you're too close to me. So sometimes it changes a bit of group dynamics. So you just, again, have to monitor and see. But it may be that you can keep them, or you can keep that pair on a bare grass, you know, particularly bare grass or a dry lot. And then when you allow them into grass, the animal that's fine can be free and the other can have the grazing muzzle, or you can just move. But I think it's really difficult to give hard and fast, as we've said, because it's so individual. But there are ways. Think round how it might be possible. But good question.
Yeah, and Pat, that's an excellent point. For so we have groups that we call, politely call, our pre no long fibre horses,
and yes,
they're horses that have never had an impaction or a choke on long fibre, so they can be around long fibre quite safely and with the rest of their group, but they don't get the same nutrition from it, because their teeth mean that they may quid, or that they simply don't process it down into small enough pieces to get the full nutrition. So then they do have these little corrals built down the side of the field. So some of our fields may have as many as 6 corrals down the side, and each horse knows which one to walk into when the feed comes, and those horses that don't go in corrals know not to go in them. So, and then there's just slip rails go across. So when we've got groups whereby a horse needs extra supportive feeding because it's not getting what it should from the forage, but hasn't yet had things like colic or esophageal choke on the forage, so it can be safely around it, then yeah, the corrals are marvellous. So that was a really good point, Pat.
Okay, I'm going to switch this up a little bit. So we've been talking about mixed herds, and I'm going to kind of come down to the ponies, donkeys, and mules. So in a mixed herd, and I love them, we have all of them, what do you have to do differently? Because they're a little different in their personalities and how they live life. Dr. Jarvis.
Oh, yeah. I loved this question when I saw this question. So I would like to, first of all, throw in a disclaimer here. So again, at the charity, because of the numbers of horses, donkeys, mules, etc., we are fortunate that we can keep like with like, if that's what the individual likes. So we do tend to keep our donkeys with donkeys, because primarily, if a donkey had the choice, a donkey does want a pair bond with another donkey. So, and they can be quite territorial, and they can be quite sort of precise in what they like. And so it does work really well. So donkeys we tend to keep with other donkeys, with the exception of a long while ago, we had a cob come in, a cob pony come in with a couple of donkeys, and they had been long-term companions. So they did join a donkey group, but the cob went with them. And luckily, this cob is so used to donkeys, it's been absolutely fine. But that's our one sort of rare one there. We've got a lovely mule, Tallulah the Mueller, who her affinity is with horses and not other mules. So she likes to be them. And I think as something you'd mentioned in a previous note, Kim, that, you know, it's probably due to the fact that, you know, that a horse was the mother figure. So that kind of fits. And then we've got a hinny called Riley. And Riley actually is happiest living with donkeys. And again, that might fit with the mother figure. But yeah, those are our sort of exceptions to the rules. We do have them because, again, it's working on what works best for the individual. And I think this is something we're going to come back to throughout the whole theme of this, is at the end of the day, you can have a textbook, but the equine is going to tell you how well it's working out. But I suppose the one thing that I would flag, that particularly in the UK, where we often have some very good green grass, and is to flag that obviously donkeys aren't small horses, and that their nutrition is very different. They can maintain weight with a lot less effort and a lot fewer calories than your horses and ponies. And so feeding, I think, is critical when you're blending groups together, because a lot of donkeys, particularly if they've got good teeth, they do really well with straw, with just maybe a little bit of hay or haylage in there. So they cope incredibly well on there with a good quality balancer. You know, pretty much that's your donkey done. And obviously they're at high risk of obesity, laminitis, etc. So sometimes blending a donkey, aside from the fact they quite like each other, blending them can be quite difficult because your dietary needs are so different. So I think if you were doing that, that would come down to having some separate arrangement for the grazing, as Pat mentioned earlier, separate corral systems, etc. So yeah, I think mixing donkeys is a little bit more difficult. The only other point I'd sort of raise is think about the difference in shelters and how they like to shelter. Because I read a really interesting study, I have to confess, I only read it today, that was conducted at the Donkey Sanctuary. And they looked at the difference in sheltering behaviours. This was in the UK, between donkeys and horses. And donkeys basically went to seek shelter the absolute minute it started to rain, the moment there was a light breeze, and the moment it dropped below 14 degrees. Whereas horses tended to stay out that bit longer before requiring the shelter. And then again, during the summer, when there's lots of insect activity, the horses went straight for the shelters, where the donkeys would prefer to be bitten by flies and stand in the sunshine than they would. So that definitely donkeys are not small horses. And I think there's lots to consider about how they get on, and even things like make sure you've got the right fencing, because if you've got a wide variety of sizes, I mean, we've all seen the small pony do a commando roll and go out underneath the fencing. So yeah, I think a lot to consider, but one of the main ones is their need for shelter. Grass feeding is very different between them. So yeah, those are my sort of initial thoughts. I'd love to hear more from you guys.
Dr. Hill?
Yeah, I would like to really emphasize that. I think nutritionally, donkeys are definitely need to be treated differently. And I think in a lot of cases, Kim, it can be challenging to mix them. However, it could be. And then also some donkeys, as you've said, don't really want to mix with ponies or horses. And they are also different in their own behavioural cues. And you were really good about the cob that had lived with donkeys and wanted to be with donkeys, but it had got adapted to how donkeys react. So I think that's even more challenging, is that I think the shelter, because donkeys' coats are not the same as horse coats. They seem to have less oil potentially. They're less able to repel water. So very sensibly, when it gets a bit wet, they go for a shelter. They're also, there is that work suggesting that just look at their tails. They're very different. And the pony in the winter has this big bushy tail. And you know, when horses see rain, they just turn into the rain. They turn their backsides into the rain. The donkey will go straight for shelter. But if there isn't shelter, or if that shelter is being used by others, then they are really going to get some stress. So I think there are some very important points that we should be careful. And I just wanted to check with you, Nikki, are you at all concerned with mixing donkeys and horses with lungworm, or not so concerned?
Yeah, so that's a superb question. And I have to be honest, I like all of our sort of animals. Yeah, obviously the pasture management is essential, fecal worm accounts are essential, although I know lungworm can be harder to find, can't it, in fecal worm accounts, your standard ones, which is a problem. And I don't know how much worldwide variation there is, Pat, but I know that the Donkey Sanctuary did a study some time ago to show that of the donkeys they tested, was it something like only 4% actually had lungworm,
which is why
it was just really low, wasn't it? Yeah. So
I think it's just something we should be aware of. You are mixing parasites potentially, but it's not an area. I think, Kim, you'd have to ask a parasitologist, but it is something that, again, to work. Yeah. And just on that, the other thing, it came to me, not only these parasites are different, but the feet are different. Donkeys did evolve more for that drier environment. They struggle in that wet in particular, potentially that their feet are more porous or they just can't manage. So donkeys in particular seem to need some dry standing where they can get their hooves out of the wet. So I think there are subtle but very serious and important management as well as nutritional differences. And then there may be on this the side that, as I say, is not my area of expertise.
Well, and I do want to mention that we do have an article about lungworms and donkeys and the spread on My Senior Horse. So our listeners can go just in the search bar, look up lungworm, and it'll take you to that article. So as we're closing out today, I want to ask our experts if you have any other kind of behavioral herd, mixed herd kind of tips or advice that you would want to share with our listeners. And let's start with Dr. Jarvis. You live with this every day.
Yes. So I think the key thing, because every day is a school day, and as I say, we are very blessed that we have superb farm teams and behavioral teams that, you know, are going to be seeing some of them minute that even I'm going to miss. So, and they've just taught me, for everything in life, it's observation, and never assume. So like I said earlier, one of the things about the mixed groups for us very much is don't assume that where a horse is in the pecking order, it will stay there. As things change, as sort of maybe the horse develops health issues, or as you mentioned earlier, it might lose a companion from the group and we may blend in another horse. But we've got to think about what was the reshuffle in the pecking order on the field when that happened. So constant observation, and we are blessed. We have our checkers go out several times a day. So they are picking up on this sort of thing. But for the private owner, very much time standing by the fence with a cup of coffee, watching is time really, really well spent. And I think just acknowledging that it may be convenient to us to blend two equines together, but the horse may not feel comfortable with that. So plan B, always have the plan Bs, and hopefully Pat and myself have mentioned a few ideas.
Dr. Harris?
Yeah, I think another thing that we haven't said, and we'll probably pick up anything of the others, is especially the older horse, and is that they may need even more monitoring. I think this whole looking at them, but the monitoring, you could look over the fence, check they're okay, spend a bit of time. But in particular, older horses, you need to take, I think all horses, but in particular, older horses, their body condition and muscle atrophy can occur so subtly and quickly. You need to really take rugs off and feel them. And, you know, these, a horse, an older horse that has always been a good doer can suddenly become something not. So I think they are important. And the final thing is time of year. They may be absolutely fine when there's, and Nikki said it earlier, plenty of resources. But there's a problem when we suddenly run out of resources, or there's mud around the water tank. And now, because of their osteoarthritis, they're struggling to get there and back. So I think you can't assume that because they're okay in the summer or the spring, that they're going to be okay all year round. So I we're going to come at monitoring, checking, don't take things for granted is probably our message, and certainly my message.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining us today. And I'm looking so forward to our next two podcasts on managing these groups of senior horses. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Kim, and lovely to chat to you as ever, Pat.
Yes, as we said at the beginning, we both are passionate about these senior horses, so it's a great opportunity to just share. And sometime, Kim, it'd be great to have one where people could ask us some questions as well, so maybe that's for the future.
That's a great idea. And we encourage our listeners to sign up today for our weekly newsletter so they can be the first to get information from My Senior Horse. And if you have comments or suggestions about senior horses, ponies, donkeys, or mules that you would like to have discussed on the podcast or even delved into for the content of My Senior Horse, send an email to me at kbrown, that's the letter K, Brown, at equinenetwork.com. Thanks for joining us today. Take care of yourselves and your senior equids.